the jeep at the edge of the beach near an outcropping of palms. It seemed logical that if Noof had jet-skied from the Sharawi's island home, she would have come here. He scaled the wall and looked down. A small skiff, looking as if it had been untouched for decades, was tied to a metal hook in the wall. Next to this was an old shack, time-worn and somehow friendly. Nair climbed down the wall. The shack's door was held firmly shut by a combination lock on a metal hasp. The lock was stubborn, but when he yanked it, there was a crack of wood, and the entire metal plate fell into his hand, leaving the door swinging free. He peered inside. What he saw made him whistle with delight. It was just as he'd imagined. In the center of the room sat a shiny black motorcycle, propped elegantly on its kickstand. Sunlight flooded into the narrow space, which was spartan, dusty, and smelled vaguely of sunscreen. A basket hung from a nail in the wall, and in it he found a tube of lipstick, some powder, lotion, and a small box of cardamom-flavored gum. Beside the basket, a white robe hung from a hook. On the floor, half hidden beneath the robe's bottom hem, was an old city map. He picked it up and read the scribbles in the margins. It was graceful script in a woman's hand. Someone had circled the zoo. Noof. The beach was empty, but the eerie sense of her presence remained. He circled round the bike. It was covered in a coat of sand. It was a fine grain, the palest beige. Most likely it had come from the desert. As he stood up, his eye fell on the chrome logo on the gas tank, a Honda logo. His fingers traced the familiar design, a bird with a single wing spread to the side. Each feather was deeply grooved. Then he saw it. Allah, what a fool. He touched the logo again. Five feathers, as neat as the stripes on the camel's leg. In a rush it came together. So this was how the killer had returned from the desert. Noof had arrived at the zoo on the motorcycle. The killer met her there, knocked her out, and put her in the truck. He'd squeezed the motorcycle into the back of the truck with the camel, then he drove to the wadi. The heat must have turned the logo into a brand, thus the marks on the camel's leg. Once the killer had abandoned Noof, the camel, and the truck in the desert, he hopped on the bike and rode back here. Later that night, he stood in the dinette of his boat, waiting for the coffee to boil. A sudden shifting of the boat announced an arrival above. A black shape swooped around the hatch, and he knew before he saw her that it was Miss Hijazi. "Nair," she called. Her voice sounded pinched. He checked his cabin clock. It was 9:30. Not too late to pay a social call, but unusual nonetheless. He climbed up the ladder and caught sight of her eyes, red and tear-stained in the glow of the cabin's light. "What happened?" he asked. "Can we talk?" "Yes, come in." She stepped into the cabin and seemed to collapse. He managed to steer her towards the sofa. After a few moments, she sat up and lifted her burqa. "I found the baby's father," she said. The expression on her face told him everything. Othman. "Of course, he's not really her brother." She gave a dry laugh. "He's adopted. But I never thought..." He was too stunned to speak. "I also found his skin cells and blood beneath her fingernails." She broke into tears again. Gently, he put an arm around her shoulders, half expecting her to flinch or pull away, but she turned and curled against him like a child. "Othman was sleeping with his sister," she wailed. At last she stopped crying and slowly, very slowly, she pulled away. "I'm so sorry," she said. "Don't be." He withdrew his arms. "You know what's funny? My father didn't want me to marry Othman. I guess he was right. I was saved just in time. If I'd married him, he wouldn't have loved me. Maybe he'd have killed me too. It doesn't mean he killed her, Nea said. How do you explain his skin beneath her nails? Maybe they fought before she was abducted. And someone else abducted her? Come on, he had a motive. He had to cover up the pregnancy. I'll bet he found out about Eric, about Noof's plan to run away, and it drove him crazy. Nea had a hard time imagining Othman kidnapping Noof, banging her on the head, driving her out to the desert. But Katya was right. He did have the motive and the opportunity. Yet why, if Othman had kidnapped her, was he so eager to find her abductor? Katya lifted her feet onto the sofa and wrapped her arms around her legs. He went into the kitchenette and took his time preparing tea. When he brought the teapot, she forced a smile. Thank you, Nea. I realize this must be awkward for you. No, he said. It's not awkward at all. He sat down at the table and poured the tea. 10 minutes later, Katya's driver came tramping down the pier, calling her name. Almost at once, she clambered up on deck, clapping her hand to her mouth. I'm all right, Ahmad. I'm so sorry, I can explain. Nea stood up and glanced at his neighbor's boats. No one was in sight, and he hated himself for feeling so relieved. Kati, Ahmad spat, barely able to contain his outrage. I've been trying to call you. Your father is terribly concerned. It's a good thing he hasn't called the police. Katya switched on her cell phone and called her father at once. Nea watched the conversation and tried to ignore the driver's nasty stare. Nothing happened, he said finally, if that's what you think. Once Katya had gone, he realized that sleep was impossible. He lay on deck, bobbing gently on the sea. A passage from the Quran sprang to mind. We have bestowed garments upon you to cover your shame as well as to adorn you, but the garment of righteousness is best. It was said that Allah created man free of evil and shame, but that once man was touched by sin, his thoughts and deeds became garments that covered and revealed him, showing him for what he was. Nair knew that if he was an honest man, he would stop veiling himself to hide the shame of Othman's naked sin. He would have to confront him. Standing in front of the Shrawi estate, Nair watched the red womb of sunset enclose the world. The front of the house was most beautiful now, when a pale vermilion streaked the clouds, and the sea shone the colour of its namesake. In the courtyard in front of the house, Nusra Ashrawi stood in a penumbra of shadow between the night and the brightness from the foyer within. When she heard his footsteps coming up the side path, she turned to the sound. Nayer, she said. Good evening, Tasim. Where were you? She asked. I heard your jeep, but then you didn't come. Nayer stopped beside her. I went to see the camels first. She chuckled softly, groped for his arm and steered him towards the house. You may not be Bedouin by blood, she said, tapping his chest, but you are in spirit. I will take you to the sitting room. Did Othman tell you our news? Our daughter Abir is going to marry next month. Congratulations! She is marrying her cousin, Kati, the young man who was supposed to marry Noof. Ah, that's convenient, Nea said. Yes, and prudent as well. Nusra stopped short at the sitting room door. Abir will be right for him. Her words hung ominously in the air. Was Abir more right than Noof? Tahsin opened the door and motioned him inside. I don't believe Othman is home yet, but I will check. Meanwhile, I'll have a servant bring tea. Without another word, she left. Nair looked around the room. He took a seat on the sofa and waited uneasily, imagining Othman's arrival, the awkwardness to which he knew they would both succumb. Everything he had planned to say seemed too harsh now. I know you killed your sister. You hit her, took her to the desert and abandoned her. You wanted her to die. Allah, I need your help. Guide my thoughts. Nair's mind turned back to the sights of his discoveries. The zoo, Eric's apartment, the shack at the beach. Had he overlooked something? A small detail that was quietly out of place? Help me, Allah. Help me see the detail. One image persisted in his mind. A map. The city map he'd found in the shack, half hidden beneath the bottom hem of a robe. What is it? He thought. The door creaked open and a woman entered. In amazement, he stared at the black robe, the burqa, and finally the hands, which he recognized as belonging to Abir. He stood up. She set the coffee service on the table. Keeping her veil down, she poured a cup and handed it to Nair, spilling only the slightest drop. He was surprised by her new confidence. I've been practicing, she said. Please be careful, it's hot. He took the cup, sat down again, and found himself staring at the sleeve of her robe. All of a sudden, his thoughts clicked into place. It wasn't the map. The map meant nothing. It was the robe that had obscured the map. A man's white robe had hung in the shack. At the time, it had seemed natural. Noof wore the robe when she went out on the motorcycle. She had to dress like a man. But Muhammad had said that Noof wore a black cloak when she left the island, then changed into the white robe when she got to the beach. She was wearing the white robe when she died. So where was her black cloak? And why was there another white robe in the shack? Who else would wear a white robe and then leave it at the beach? Nair was stunned by this discovery, empowered by it even as he marvelled at his ignorance. He looked up at Abir, wondering suddenly why she'd come. Did she want information? Or was she afraid he was going to say something to Othman? I think I know what happened to your sister, he said calmly.